The beginning for someone who maybe has been living under a rock or doesn't know about the show, walk us through what Inside Government is.
So we do two shows as public affairs shows through Keoghan Community College. So going back in some history, not to get everybody bored, but as you know, having been in media and being in media, there used to be a lot of mom and pop radio and TV stations before they all kind of started merging into regions. So Auburn Cablevision, which was owned by the Osborne family, which owned the Citizen before that, created Auburn Cablevision. And one of the links they had was with Auburn Community College, which then evolved to Keoghan Community College. And part of their public role was that they needed to do public affairs programming. This is back with the equal time components and all that. And so the, a woman by the name of Rita Valentino created two shows back in the late 70s, early 80s. And when I came aboard, maybe about 20 years later, having appeared on her show several times, we changed it into two different shows. One, she called it Inside City Hall. Mm-hmm. And we kind of a little more expansive on that. So we'll have state senators and assembly members and state figures on there if they're in government. And we do cover Keoghan County and Onondaga County and the city of Auburn. And the other one is Beyond the Front Page, which I took from a David Broder column from many, many years ago because I just like the name.
That sounds very newspapery.
It is very newspapery. And it is basically covering the stuff that we don't cover in government. So next week and the week after, we've had with COVID an increase regionally in, unfortunately, domestic violence cases and in opioid and heroin overdoses. And so we'll highlight those for 30 minutes as well. So the shows are filmed, directed, and produced by the students at Keoghan. They get credit for it. It's a great program where we've had placement of our students at, you know, Fox, NBC, nationally known media companies, as well as everything from park outdoor signs and just around the United States. So it's been a great program. It's cathartic for me because I'm a public policy junkie. Yeah. In a good way, by the way. But we try to figure out what is in the news and what people want to hear about. And the college has been very, very decent to me to let me go out and pick who the guests are. They're very hands off. There's a professor there by the name of Steve Keeler, who is very, very well known for in the telecom communications area. Had a number of leadership jobs in Syracuse with media before he came to Keoghan as a professor. And we've just worked together for some time to try to get students to put good shows together. And we've expanded, just like Finger Lakes has expanded. We now are on YouTube. You know, somebody can tune in during the taping. Hopefully I don't screw up the opening too badly. I've been known to do that, get my words tangled, and they can do that either live or go on to YouTube and watch a show if there's a specific. And we tend to see, I don't necessarily pay attention to a lot of this, but when I have to go send a clip to somebody, I will look to see how many views there are. And obviously state officials tend to get more views when it's a political campaign. So I do all the questions. I do, you know, set up and all that. The only thing I don't do, and I did this because I had a newspaper column for about 25 years before I took another job, and I don't ask the questions during a forum. So we have Jeremy Boyer, who's the executive editor of The Citizen, who you know, does a great job coming up with the questions. It's just I need to be the neutral moderator. Right. So I keep them in line, hopefully, on time. Yeah. Students time keep. And then the other issue is that obviously I know a lot of these people through life, and it is easier for me to moderate versus being the one who's going to ask them a question that's more newsworthy. That doesn't mean they're not fair game when they come on either Beyond the Front Page or Inside Government, but that's a different mechanism than
right.
Just a forum, as you know.
So I want to go back into the roots a little bit there, because you mentioned something that's kind of interesting. You started as a guest and then morphed your way into host. And I'm curious, what was that transition like for you as a person, as you're literally like having to, I would assume there was a fair bit of learning on the fly and just kind of like experimenting with different sort of like, you know, takes and methods and that sort of thing.
So again, the college was very accepting. And so what occurred is Rita Valentino was there for a very, very long time. And they, again, people don't want to get into all the media stuff, but I think Auburn Cable sold to Heron before it sold to someone else. And it kept going on by the time it got to Adelphia and Time Warner. Mm-hmm. So at some point she retired and she was replaced by a fellow by the name of Ed Lockhern, who was a two-term mayor of the city of Auburn. He was there for maybe 6 years. So I was a guest of hers when I was at City Hall. I happened to be mayor for a term. And so I was a guest regularly on her show. And it was really interesting that that's when she used to go through the mayor's office and say, okay, who do you want as a guest? I tend to ask the city manager and the mayor or the county chair, you know, I'm going to invite somebody, but I wanted to let you know they're coming on. Ed Lockhern, who was my predecessor as mayor, I succeeded him as the host of the show. So he at some point just decided not to do it. And Steve Keeler, who had known me as a guest and knew I still had a newspaper column at that time, said, would you be willing to do this? And my employer at that point was a group called Options for Independence. We were a disability agency that had offices here in Seneca Falls, as well as in Auburn. They were very accepting of it. I had a great board, terrifically nice people. They thought it was great. I made sure that we didn't talk about disability issues.
Of course.
And trying to avoid those types of conflicts. But overall, it was literally going out there and winging it for the first couple of shows. And then, you know, it's really great to work with college students. So I'm very lucky to see them. I try to remember all their names because over, I think, as we were talking, until you invited me on here, I wasn't looking at the history of this, but I think I've been doing this for 20 years. So that's, you know, 40 semesters. We don't do during the summer. But again, really great staff. And the current staff at the college, Steve Keeler's been there since day one for me.
Of course. Yeah.
But the other guys there who are professors and staff that make us look good and hopefully sound good, or reversed or make us look good. They, you know, Doug Brill and Jeff Sesniak and Mike Moreno have been there, I think, for at least 10 years. And so they're the conduit that really brings it home. And they're really good. They're very fun and they're very cooperative.
How do you, so here's the question for, I've been hosting a podcast, either this podcast or a podcast in similar format for about 5-6 years now. And keeping it fresh, staying, I don't want to say motivated, but trying to always figure out what the next step is as far as what the interesting topics are, what the right questions are to ask. What's been your approach over that 20 years to not just keep the show fresh and interesting, but also keep yourself mentally fresh with topics that I would assume at times, even though you're a policy junkie, may feel a little redundant?
So I would say in the last year, it's changed a lot, and we can talk about that in maybe a second. But I think originally it was by changing it from inside City Hall to inside government, kind of broadened that scope. So we weren't just talking about sewers and landfills and, you know, the double days at that time or whatever. Yeah. So by expanding it out that way, that helped. The fall for us is really, and you know this, it is tough to schedule guests. It's not, you know, you have to come up with the right guests and the right time. And sometimes we have dumb luck that we'll schedule a guest 3 weeks from now, and all of a sudden something happened in Albany that dominates the whole show. Mm-hmm. That may not be why they came on, but that's how we get, you know, we get into that. So by expanding it out that way, by also expanding it on the Beyond the Front Page side, which was to basically look at other broader issues. Again, the college gives me a lot of discretion. I have an interest in public policy, but I also have an interest in public health. I have an interest in not-for-profits. I've had not-for-profits 20 plus years, so it helps to have that. And so you look at things that are of interest to me and hopefully things that will pop up in the paper or trends. I going back to the fall tends to be an easier way for us to do shows because we do think it is our responsibility to do candidate forums.
Right.
And so that will tend to block out. We will do anywhere, and this spring is different because we're only allowed, because of COVID, one show per taping.
Yeah.
So we'll do a lot more shows this year, and we did a lot more in the fall when we return. But normally we'll do about 13 double days of shows. So that's 26 shows. But in this fall, it's a little bit less. It's closer to 11. But some of those days are just candidate forums. So if you have half the legislature, the Cuyahoga County legislature up, you know, we have those in the odd years. Mm-hmm. Last year, I believe we did six of the six state legislative races that cover Cuyahoga County. So fall tends to be an easier way. Again, I don't have to come up with the questions.
Right.
I have a lot of questions. I may have to wait till afterwards.
Yeah.
And we've been able to do, and up until the last, I would say, 5 years, 6 years, we've mostly had an agreement by the congressional candidates to come on. But for state legislative races, mayor, county legislature, we've even done the coroner's race. That one has been a little different. So the coroner, I don't have a lot of questions for a coroner candidate or for a judge, because I can't ask a judge, as you know,
right,
yeah, many questions. Yeah. But what we do bring them in, and we give them 15 or 20 minutes to just talk about themselves.
Right.
And that's just so the public can know them. I also think this is a way for the citizen, who's a really an important partner on that front, to also develop some questions that they would like to put to candidates that they may not necessarily want to do just in an editorial interview. And originally when I started, we had, I think, three mediums at that point. We had the Citizen, the Post Standard, and WAUB. And as you know, that has all changed.
Yeah.
Not for the better, in the sense that I always think that having competing media outlets is good for the public. But it has changed. So now our partner is mainly the Citizen, which is great. And like I said, I had ridden for them for 25 years, I think it was. So trying to keep it fresh is, there's enough in the news.
Yeah.
Even if it's a little thread, we'll pick on. And so the one on domestic violence, frankly, is based on a comment that I think the sheriff said at a meeting I was at. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, okay, let's go a little bit farther and to find out that domestic violence cases are up. People are enclosed. How does somebody who's living with an abuser report it out?
Yeah.
You know, that to me, even if there's only 100 or 200 people who watch that, okay.
Yeah.
If we get one or two, we do get a lot of not-for-profits who will ask also, as you do, they need to promote their events.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we are happy to do that.
Yeah.
So, for example, East Hill Medical, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary in Cuyahoga County, is celebrating its 50th this year. They're going to be next week. We've always had somebody representing the double days to sell. I mean, I'm fine. You want to sell seats at a baseball park, we're fine on that.
Go for it.
Don't be overt.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
But for a lot of not-for-profits, if they're doing a charity event, we've done that in regards to the HEAL program with opioids and heroin. And we try to keep a number of slots that way as well.
Yeah. So obviously you've been on both sides of the table, so to speak, as an elected official and as someone who watches closely what elected officials do. What's it like watching what that evolution has been over the last 20 to 30 years, just in terms of what or how elected officials are treated today compared to what it was in the 90s or 80s?
So I think it was rough in the 90s, but not as rough as it is today. And today, and we're not, we don't have talking heads, so we don't have a panel. We have shied away. I've talked about the idea of bringing in several, for example, media reporters like Robert Harding, who does a wonderful job at the Citizen on politics, as you know, and things like that. Kind of shied away from that. We did it once or twice. It didn't resonate. We tend to not have, with the exception of a couple of forums every now and then, candidate forums, we don't have people speaking over each other.
Okay.
I do think it is a little bit different now that there is so much coming towards elected officials,
mm-hmm.
whether it's what they're seeing in the newspaper, which might be much more limited and frustrating to them in many cases, because they will say, well, that's not what I said or the context of what I was saying. And, you know, they only gave me a sentence and a half, but I spoke for 2 hours. And so one of the reasons we're there is to let somebody give the answer they want to give. But we do not pull any punches. If they say something that doesn't make sense, we will follow up and ask them to substantiate it. We're not a hostile environment. I do think the forums, depending on what the race is, they tend to be more localized city council races. The state assembly tends to get heated. Not always the case with state senate or congressional races along the way.
So you mentioned something there that I thought was a little interesting. It seems to be that social media is probably the one big, because a lot of people are going to hear what you just said and say, well, wait a second, you just said that there's far fewer media outlets and a lot of newsrooms are smaller and all that sort of stuff. So how is there more coming out? You're referring to social media, right?
At least I am. Partly. Social media and just that people make up their own facts.
Right.
Let's be blunt. There are people who we know still don't believe that the November election was decided the way it was, or that the vaccines, whether it's Johnson & Johnson or Pfizer or Moderna, are the right way. There's a lot of things coming to people. And unfortunately, a lot of that is carried not only by social media, it's also covered by cable. The one place I usually will not eat in a restaurant is if someone had, and I don't care which persuasion is, if all I'm hearing in the background is talking heads, I can get that. I can eat at home.
Yeah.
I
get it.
It's at some point, I'm not a big MSNBC, Fox guy. I don't necessarily listen to those things because I think they have to fill time. And that may not be time given to factual information on both sides of the aisle.
Well, it's that convergence, right, of fact and opinion, and just that blending of the two, and you never really know what you're actually consuming when you're watching some of these outlets, whether it's CNN, Fox, or MSNBC,
right,
or whatnot.
I mean, and unfortunately, I think it is gotten into the realm of elected officials who say stuff on the floor of an elected body. We did have a lot of that back, I would say, in the 90s when I was there, that people would say things like that. But I think if you put them on television and you put them with a video camera or digital download, and you can say, okay, so now back this up.
Mm-hmm.
You said you can get typhoid from the sewer water. Well, tell me where you... And this was a factual item 30 years ago. Tell me how, after it goes through a sewage treatment plant, you're saying that the people downstream are getting typhoid. Just give me the science. That's all I ask. Let's hopefully get it that way. But I do think people are just bombarded. I mean, it's tough. I have to tell you, I think people who run for elected office right now have to have almost the hide of a rhinoceros, because where it used to be a letter to the editor or somebody taunting you or your family at an event or something, or calling the cops on you or something like that. That's all child's play now to, you know, to the time now that you go on and you can't even figure out who just attacked you, for what reason and why, and then it all spills into your family life as well.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I think a lot of what we see in the media are the comments underneath, obviously, stories on Facebook.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because I can recall back to the days when, you know, FingerLakes1.com had a forum that was essentially like the main commenting system back in the day. And it's fascinating because just like last year, I was talking to some of my friends and I was like, people say things under their own name with their own profile picture next to it that they would only say on the forum 15 years ago. And they're saying it every day, over and over again. Frankly, the craziest stuff you could possibly imagine. And it's just I think it puts whether you're hosting a government program like you are, or whether you're a reporter, whatever the case may be, it puts the author in a bit of a pickle, I think. How do you process that part of it?
Yeah, so that's the tough part. I think we have become so polarized. I don't know how we get out of this. I also think it is tough for interviewers, when you have people who are just literally, you could ask them a question and they will avoid that answer because they've got a talking point. I do think people are much more, when they come into the studio, and I don't know if this is the same for you, I do think that on some occasions, the more sophisticated the person, they will come in with talking points that you cannot have them either defend or delve into. So let's talk about political candidates. It is interesting, and I won't say which party this is, but the last two cycles of local elections in Cayuga County, one party has been briefing their candidates very, very well. So they're clearly having them watch the YouTube videos of what 2 years ago was, or a cycle there. They're coming in with briefing books. So I remember when I ran for mayor, I had a binder and I had my facts, because and the word I would overuse, as my father still says, is specifically. And I had this stuff. I will say I will see candidates who will come in, who will come in with a binder that if I said lake quality, they move the tab. Uh-huh. They are the ones who come in with their 2 minute opening and 2 minute closing, scripted to the second. Not necessarily my favorites. Yeah. My favorites are the ones who pull out a piece of paper like they were Lincoln on the way to Gettysburg, except they didn't fold it as well as Lincoln did. And so, and they tend to be all over the place in their opening and closing, and they don't necessarily come in with a fact alone. But there are some who are really, and I don't know to what extent you're seeing it, they will come in with a list that says, if we're going to talk about, the lake shouldn't be political, but if we're talking about ag runoff into lakes, these are the points our group, our party is going to make. This is where we are from a public policy standpoint, which isn't really exciting when it comes to getting a real answer.
So I'm glad you said that, because I'll be totally honest. You know, that's at least part of the reason why over the last 2 to 3 years we've scaled back some of the campaign and forum style interviews that we had done in the past, was because there is nothing worse, frankly, than those canned responses that, you know, because you've been getting all the mailers and you've seen the verbiage, and it's not even changed up a little bit to just make it like, and that is that constant, it's that constant battle. I mean, it's one of those things where I think a lot of people who consume these types of events, whether it's a forum or even a debate or, you know, an interview, they think the host is going, or the interviewer is going to be able to just parse through it and make them stop. But
it's tough.
At times it's hard to redirect.
Yeah. So let's say take a state Senate race or a state assembly race. We know that Jeremy Boyer is going to go in there, and the burden is really on him.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the burden is on him to come up with 10 to 15 fresh questions. Well, we all know that there are at least half of those are going to be standardized questions.
Right.
You know, in the fall, I would think that all of them got the same question in some form or not. The state started off the fiscal year with a $14 billion shortfall in April. It's gotten worse with COVID. How do you make it up? Do you cut schools? Do you what do you cut? Do you raise revenues? Well, if you're the first candidate and you may not see that coming, okay. But by the time you're the fifth or sixth, your campaign has made sure they've watched the other five videos.
Oh, yeah.
And they know there's a trend there. Becomes very tough on the Cuyahoga County legislature races because, you know, there are between, you know, half the legislature is seven or eight, but there's usually about five competitive races. If you're the first person, you're the unlucky person. But by the time you're the fifth, you know you're going to likely get a question on the bulk of them. If you reside in western Cuyahoga County, well, there might be a land claims question in there.
Right.
If you reside up in Sterling, you're going to get an Ontario Lake question that you wouldn't necessarily get. So there's that variance, but the bulk of the questions are, where are you on administrator? Where are you on taxes? And it does. I'm worried that people are losing their spontaneity to give you true answers and also for you to figure out who they are as people.
Frankly, I think it's something that's, and this was one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, was the loss of interest in local government. And just seeing present day how few people are engaged with local politics, whether it's town, village, city, county, compared to 20, 30 years ago. I mean, it's
well, it wasn't
almost
great back
a different
then either.
World.
It wasn't back. It depended on what the subject was. I would only say this. I think that when something is negative, you'll get the turnout. If your taxes are going up, if assessments are going to go up, I think you will get people during a budget. I had this conversation with Mayor Quill the other day in Auburn. You know, you've got COVID protocols where people can come into the room and they can do Zoom. What's your turnout? Well, it's minimal. But is that because you're down to a handful or less of reporters that can't cover all these things in any detail? I mean, the local newspapers don't have their resources anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have evolved or devolved, maybe that's the better phrase, to a USA Today format for news stories. Rarely does it go to A2 or A3 or A4. It's, can we get the whole story on the front page with a great photo?
Yeah.
And I think that does tend people on that. I also think that the other issue is I think people are much, much busier now because they are thrown. I mean, look, I don't know if you get cable or Dish or whatever. Think about how much you are exposed to now, from Hulu to HBO Max, all this. So people are getting, if that category, or they've got 1,000 things to do with their kids. I think people are overwhelmed there. I think our work habits have changed dramatically. I think that's going to be an offshoot of this. And that also will have an impact about whether they care what's happening at the sixth floor of the county legislature, at the Board of Supervisors in Waterloo, or if they're going to do anything at City Hall.
I'm curious. You've probably done countless interviews on the broad topic of the pandemic. How are you feeling about things? When you look forward, when you look forward to the other side of the pandemic, what do you see?
So one of the things that we have done, and I cannot say enough nice things about Kathleen Cuddy in Cuyahoga County, who's the public health director. She hates coming on my show. She will tell you that. Not because she doesn't like answering questions. She doesn't want to be on television. I get that. And she has done a great job for us since March. We have had her twice each semester. So that has been helpful to explain things. I do think work-wise, lifestyle, you know, at CUGA, we only have about 10% of our students on campus right now in any given week,
right?
Because of the pandemic. I think as people get vaccinated, I think that will change. But I don't think we're going to go away from masks. We're going to see variants, as we see in South Africa and New York City. That's going to be the issue. I think the bigger issue that we all have to worry about are those people who don't believe the science or don't want to get a vaccine for whatever reason. It is interesting. Since the state fair decided, and this is anecdotal, since the state fair announced earlier in the week that they were going to do the J&J one shot, a number of people who I have talked to prior to this were not keen on Pfizer or Moderna because they didn't want to go for a second shot. I have three friends who went today because, or signed up today because they can get J&J, and they're fine with that. And so, you know, CUGA County, I don't know what Seneca's numbers are, but CUGA County was, you know, at a pretty good rate about a week and a half ago, I think 12%, and that's 12% including children, which we obviously know from 18 and below, you can't count. So that number is much higher.
Yeah.
I do think post-pandemic, or it's not going to be post-pandemic, post-crisis right now, it is going to be interesting to see how many people get that, how do they follow protocols. Are we still going to be wearing masks? You know, I brought mine in. You've got yours there. Yeah, we're whether it's gaiters or masks or whatever, I think we're going to be doing that. I think the interesting point for us, and again, we try not to do two guests, the same guests in a semester.
All right.
We are doing an education right now because schools are the way they are.
Yeah.
They've got two dilemmas. They've got state cuts on a budgetary fund, and they have a pandemic. And oh, by the way, mixed into that is they have a number of new mandates, plexiglass, sorry, I thought I turned that off, plexiglass or sprays or whatever they do on doing that. And I thought I really turned that off. So I apologize.
It's the beauty of editing.
Yeah. So I think with that, we have brought those types of guests in there. I think education is going to be the new variable. We do not even have a concept of what it's going to look like 2 years from now. So I tend to read books that look at trends and things like that. I'm a heavy reader in that. I think it is going to be very interesting to see what the new world looks like 2 years from now. Good and bad. There's going to be some stuff. You know, we all joke about Zoom calls right now, but it's going to change the way we do business.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I had a not-for-profit. I will tell you that my best attendance in the last 4 years is because we're doing Zoom. Because I have people who are in-state, outside of CUGA County. I have people outside of the state of New York. And they are tuning in. So our last board meeting, I believe we had all 18 of 18 members, which we've never had because somebody can't leave work.
Right.
Or they can't do that. And that's been the case, I think, for the last three board meetings. So does that mean people are going to do that? I think we could have done this remote. I hate remote. We have the option of doing Zoom. We have done, we did Jim Seward back in December or November as a Zoom.
Right.
We did it because he was very clear he had had COVID.
Oh, yeah.
He had a compromised immune system because of some surgeries. And it made sense.
Yeah.
I don't want to do a Zoom interview.
Right. I get it. This is actually, I'll say this. This is the first Sunday conversation I've done in person with a guest sitting in front of me in a year and a month. And, you know, the last one, I believe it was Vinny Esposito, about a month before everything sort of changed for what has been the last year.
Yeah, so we scrapped all of the spring after we got to about March 15th.
Oh, right.
We scrapped everything. And then when we came back in September, we started earlier because we wanted to make sure students get their credits. So normally we don't start until the last week of September, first week of October. we started very early, and this year we, instead of starting the second or third week of February, we started at the end of January. One guest, one show, guest leaves, students are in there cleaning the desks, yep. disinfecting. We've only done it twice because we had two bad snowstorms, as you know, and there are some credits that those students have to do. So we've only done one show where there have been two shows back to back, but the guests had to come time apart, clean the studios, where I would normally have, so let's say you're a not-for-profit, Hospice of the Finger Lakes. Terry Kinney Klein was always a great guest. She's since retired, but she'd bring in a board member, somebody who uses the services, and herself. United Way, we would have the director of the United Way, the campaign chair, enough. We're one guest. Yeah. And I do think that is going to be more often for the smaller organizations like ourselves in that medium, unless the college or SUNY change or the state of New York, I think that's going to be tougher to deal with.
As an interviewer, do you like that? Do you prefer the one-on-one versus the I'll call it not panel, but the panel interview?
Panels are okay because you often, as you know, sometimes get a guest whose only answers are three words.
Yeah.
And it's tough. I also tend to interrupt people. I will tell you there are a couple of state senators who will say, let me get my answer. And I say, well, once you stop filibustering, it was prior to Joe Manchin,
right.
Do that. I tend to like to ask a lot of questions of people. So I'm more comfortable when it's a one-on-one. So if it is Dana Balter or John Katko or, any of those, or a local person who's going to be talking about their not-for-profit, it is usually easier from my perspective to do it one-on-one. What I'm looking for are good conversationalists, people who know their subject, aren't coming in with eight. If they're coming in to sell something, that's fine. And again, I say that whether it's theater tickets, if you're the Auburn Public Theater and you want to, promote a show, fine. But we're going to also talk about other stuff that goes on there. As long as you're prepared for that, I'm fine with that.
You mentioned education, maybe being one of the things that we really see some pretty big change over the next few years between the money and the sort of things that districts have gotten used to doing, teachers have gotten mm-hmm. comfortable with. Remote learning, what are you, as you have different conversations with folks in education, what are you hearing? Because it's interesting what I've heard over the last year versus what I seem to be catching a lot of when I watch the 5 o'clock news or what have you, that sort of thing. It seems there are very different experiences of those on the ground versus those who are talking about some of the problems or the things that teachers and students have been experiencing for the last year.
So let's take higher ed and secondary. Yep. So I think if you were a place like Cayuga, which invested a lot in online classes prior to 2010, mm-hmm. so going back that far, I think you were in pretty good shape when you got there. I think most districts, from the superintendents I've talked to, as well as educators and school board members, where I have talked to them, whether it's on the phone or it's not necessarily always been face-to-face, I think we were all very unprepared for what should have been a new world, just like mm-hmm. we should be at Mars by now. We said in 1969 we'd have colonies on the moon and all that. We haven't done the technology, and maybe that will be one of the positives of this whole thing, will be that we are investing in some of that infrastructure. We haven't invested in broadband, but we're still having some real big problems with buildings and with internet and connections. I have an 8-year-old who goes 2 days a week. He would love to be 5 days a week, and his mom and I would love to have him 5 days a week. But he's a kid who thrives in that atmosphere. I do know that there are districts who have, for a variety of different ways, are trying to make sure their kids are engaged online. Everything from if they don't show up in a phone, and I won't identify the districts, but two different districts, I've talked to their superintendents. One case where districts literally start calling the student when they don't show up.
Oh.
And that's at 8 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, they get another call. But by 11, they're calling the parent.
Yeah.
The other one is the child who would like to do their Zoom call from their bed. Mm-hmm. We also have an issue with buildings. So we're in a beautiful building here right now that most likely is pretty good if they were still using it from a social distancing point of view. They're big rooms.
Oh, yeah.
You could do that. We don't have that. So that's why a district like Port Barn is able to go 4 to 5 days a week. It's the same with Skinny Atlas. But on the other hand, Auburn, until, and you know, Onondaga County just, you know, Tegupta made some decisions and announcements yesterday on, which would be Thursday. That's going to change how they deal with that. Walkable schools, where you don't have to be on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know districts are now surveying parents to say, we'd love to bring your children back 5 days a week, but we can't bus them.
Yeah.
How are you going to get them there? So I think that's going to be a challenge. I was surprised at how many districts were well prepared of having Chromebooks and the technology to get out the door in March. The problem was their staffs had not gotten the training to do that. And the second one is we live in a rural area in this country, especially when you look at the Finger Lakes and Central New York, where so I see a digital divide two ways. One is, you know, laptops and desktops. That's one. But having a child connect, and when the district says, well, you can go to our parking lot to get an internet connection, I think that decision was made when they thought that the virus was going to be gone in 2 months.
Right.
It made sense. Okay.
Yeah.
They could make that lot. You can't. A year now. You and I have been living through this for a year now. You can't do that. So I think you are going to have to see whether it's, and I do think it comes more from Albany or Washington. You will see more investment. That's a necessity now in broadband and that technology, just as Eisenhower invested in roadways in the 1950s, but for different reasons, though part of it was a national security issue. I think you are going to have people who are going to say you're going to have to, you know, go down. If you're in Ovid, you may not have what you need. There is no reason in this right now, and we've been talking about this for 10, 15 years. When you edit this, if you can put the AOL dial-up number on there, the agricultural community should not have to be using dial-up to download their forms and paperwork to the Department of Agriculture. It may be that COVID is going to solve that problem. Maybe.
Yeah.
And it depends on what we're going to invest in.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I recall just reading a couple days ago that the governor, after not signing a bill that was passed last year to study broadband access, promised it was going to be in this year's budget. His draft budget comes out. It's nowhere to be found. So it's one of those things where, like you said, the broadband access part is going to have to be addressed. But it's funny because one of the pieces of feedback that I saw pretty continually throughout the pandemic, but then it really kicked up after the Victor Central School District went through this whole thing. They were essentially a ransomware attack.
Right.
And students were out of school for about a week. No in-person anything because phones and internet were down. They were able to keep learning remotely, but the number of parents and the number of emails that we got with just frustrated parents saying, why are we so throwing their hands up saying, why are we so reliant on technology? It's fascinating because I'm listening to what you're saying and it seems to be this continual friction towards the idea of adopting technology and just embracing it in all of these different arenas, whether it's school or whatever the case may be, just latching onto it and saying it's going to make us better. We would have been more prepared for this moment if, you know, we weren't totally technology averse in terms of how we're teaching students last year.
So none of this is new stuff.
Yeah.
So a guy named Felix Rovington, who helped bail out New York in the 1970s, wrote a great book about 10 years ago. He talked about investment. And he wasn't saying do X, Y, and Z, but he was giving 10 examples. Well, clearly his first example was the Erie Canal. Okay, we're now celebrating, what, the 200th anniversary of that?
Yeah.
Somebody had a vision and said you have to make that, and how you do that with capital funds. And that may mean that you can't do your port projects here and there. You have to have a master plan. I mentioned Eisenhower on highways. I think that's why it's been interesting to see in the virus world the use of the Defense Production Act now, with Merrick now having being authorized to help J&J, where competitors are doing that. That because I think there's a crisis and people just need to get to that stage and they need to get to the end. The question is, what are we going to do afterwards? What are we going to invest in? Because right now, we don't do space. It's Elon Musk. It's Jeff Bezos, which is great. I'm a space geek, love rockets, grew up in the 1960s. That's cool, but they're not public entities anymore. So the question is, where is the federal and state governments? Because we do know that localities can't do it. They can't go to their public and ask them to do it. There's just not that tax base there to do it. And there's not necessarily a tax base in some states to do it, but who else is going to do that to get you the next level? And I think the vaccine is going to, I think what's going to be interesting for you and I are what are going to be those books in 5 years that do a dissection, not necessarily of just the last year, but the follow-up. Mm-hmm. What's it going to look like in 2023?
Yeah.
And who's going to make all those money on those books?
Yeah.
Other than Bob Woodward.
So you're a policy junkie, and I wanted to throw this question at you. We hear all the time in the news, you're reading it, you're seeing it, you're hearing, reading it on Twitter, wherever the case may be. The system is broken, and the system can refer to about two or three or four dozen different things. When you look at where we are right now, not just as from a government standpoint, federal, state, local level, but socially, culturally, what is that next policy item that you think there's enough desire to really see tangible change in the next 3, 4, 5, 6 years?
It's a great question. And I just don't think we're there. It's horrible for me to say that. I don't know that we are there. I think the biggest challenge for the Biden administration and whoever's in Albany, because God knows what's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 weeks, is to build consensus. So we are, by the way, no different than 30 years ago. So I just read Tom Brokaw's memoirs on Watergate. It's interesting. And they talk about protesters at rallies and then protesters attacking at a Richard Nixon rally in, I think, July of 74, the press. Well, it sounds like just like what Jim Acosta went through at CPAC or whatever. I really think we are polarized. I think we've been polarized. If you go back to the election of 1800, yes, we've always had that. I do worry that we're so polarized, but in different factions for different reasons. So if you look at a legislature or board of supervisors, sometimes it's not Republican and Democrat, because that's the easy way.
Yeah.
It's really fiscal conservative people versus less fiscally conservative, because they're all conservative up here. Mm-hmm. Nobody's out there saying just spend money willy-nilly. But there's that too. And then it's urban versus rural. I think that's the problem you have here. I think in New York, you expect, if we're going to bubble it out like an explosion, in New York, you've got a downstate, upstate divide. You know, somebody who represents Rochester, Buffalo, Binghamton, Syracuse, and Albany looks at it a lot differently than somebody who was elected in Seneca Falls, in Auburn. And that doesn't help the dialogue. And then it's just a mishmash in Washington. I mean, today we're literally having somebody read the stimulus package, 668 pages, I think, and it's going to take 10 to 15 hours.
Yeah.
So tell me why that's good for the country. I'm not, that's facetious. It's not to you, but I guess so when you ask me what's the next big thing, mm-hmm. so the former mayor of Chicago used to say he was in the Clinton administration, never let a crisis go to waste. So the question is, are we going to let this go to waste? Are we going to invest in the CDC? Are we going to invest in medical technology? Are we going to, and I know the Biden administration said this before the pandemic, they would have liked to invest in cancer research and things. Those are things that we should be able to all say, we'd like to do away with cancer. We all know somebody. We most likely all know a lot of people who've dealt with that. But is there that national consensus building? I worry about that. You know, I served on a city council, not to go back too far, where at one point it was three of my party, and then it shifted to two of my party, three of the opposition. Every week I spent on the phone as mayor I called the vast majority. There was one member of council at that time didn't talk to me, so that's a different issue. But both Republicans and Democrats, I called because I thought we needed to invest. So we did a major project at that time, and it doesn't sound like a lot now, but we had to invest about $60 million in sewers. And for a city of 28,000-30,000, that's a lot of money back 30 years ago. But we need to get there. I look here. As I sit here, I get to see Double Day's things behind you because I know this station has been very supportive of minor league baseball. And in whatever iteration it will be, we need to get four votes. And that had to be bipartisan to build a new ball field. Because there was a local share. It wasn't just Mario Cuomo at that time saying we're going to give half the money to a locality. You have to come up and pony up money as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we have those people building that consensus. You know, Chris Matthews did a great book about Reagan and Tip O'Neill about 5 years ago. They could complain about each other during the day, and afterwards they can, you know, go out to dinner or have drinks, most likely drinks and not dinner afterwards. I'm not sure. So for 4 years, and he's still one of my best friends. I would say he's one of my two best friends. I served on a board with somebody who's the complete political opposite of me. We went to dinner every Thursday night with rare exceptions. Now, granted, the joke was his wife paid me to take him out because he would come home frustrated by a city council meeting. But we went out. I don't know if there's that camaraderie. You know, it's all about getting back into your district, or it's all about getting on the phone or doing an interview. This is a very long answer. I apologize. I don't know that we're at the point of figuring out what the next big thing is for New York or for the United States.
It's too bad because there's a lot of big things.
Yeah. A lot of cool things we could do.
Yeah.
To make the world better.
Yeah. Guy, appreciate the time. Thanks so much
for taking it. I've been delighted to do this. It was a great conversation. Thank you for having me.